Hello, and welcome to another SCARS podcast from the Society of Citizens Against Relationship Scams. This is Dr. Tim McGinnis speaking. Today, we want to talk about the psychology of scams, particularly some of the effects that are caused by the manipulation techniques that the scammers employ. One of the more recent techniques that we have learned about is something called ASMR. ASMR is a unique phenomenon in humans that results in feelings of pleasure, relaxation, euphoria, that can be used to reduce stress, but it can also be used to reduce distrust. We believe that scammers have accidentally or intuitively been using the autonomous sensory meridian response, ASMR, as a means of relaxing potential scam victims in the early stages of their scams, and also potentially when victims are feeling nervous, anxious, distrustful about the scam experience that they're going through. ASMR is a very curious process. It involves a variety of sensory experiences that would result in reduced anxiety, distrust, etc., as we have said. Now, this can include scratching noises, such noises can result in physical feelings, goosebumps, tingling, but ASMR can also be a whisper, softly spoken, that results in excitement, exhilaration, relaxation, attention, and control. So ASMR is a range of specific capabilities that scammers sometimes can and do employ to overcome those moments of distrust by their scam victims. Let's start with the initial ways in which the scammers breach your defenses. This is something that we know as stranger trust. From children on throughout our lives, we automatically trust strangers. In a 2017 study, it suggests that we are more likely to trust strangers instead of someone that we know. That's because strangers are an unknown, and this mechanism in our brain automatically enables a projection of trust onto them, whereas someone that we know actually has characteristics, qualities, attributes that we have learned and learn to distrust, discount, or discredit. So how trusting are you? Would you let a stranger borrow your phone in an emergency? You probably would. Would you lend your friend money if they couldn't make their rent? Maybe not. Have you ever been kinder to a stranger than you are to your own sibling? Probably. Obviously, these are all aspects that means you trusted a stranger. You trusted them with your emotions and probably your money. Many of you undoubtedly sat in contemplation of what molds our trust in friends and strangers. What makes us inclined to give some people the benefit of the doubt, but occasionally cast a skeptical eye on others? And is there a relationship between how closely we trust people and how well we know them? Actually, there is. We've been looking at this problem for years, and recent studies help cast light on why we trust strangers. We trust strangers even when it doesn't make sense to do so. Relationships, businesses, governments, almost every interaction people have is built on trust. E-commerce can't survive without it. But why do we put so much faith in others? What makes us so sure that the person who puts a mint condition baby carriage up for sale actually owns the carriage, isn't lying when he says it's in mint condition, or will send the carriage to us when we pay them? David Dunning, a psychology professor at Cornell University, and his colleagues say that all rational behavior theories predict that people shouldn't trust complete strangers. We have no way of knowing that the other person will do what he promises, or she promises, in any transaction, because we know nothing about that person. Any rational model of behavior predicts that the other person will renege on any promise as soon as it's in his best interest to do so. Survival of the fittest and all that. But in a series of trust experiments with more than 600 undergraduates, the scientists found that more than 60% would give away a small sum of money even if their two options were that the other person would keep it all or if the person decided to return it, that both would get back a larger amount if the students were actually calculating the odds of getting their money back or increasing it. Only 20% would have given the money away, would have taken the gamble. What does that tell us about ourselves? That we're more of a society than we thought. Most of the participants talked about politeness and rudeness as motivating them to trust their fellow study subject, in other words, strangers, even if it meant potentially getting exploited by them. Was this a characteristic that you experienced during your romance scam? That in the early days you were concerned about rudeness and politeness? The student's behavior was a comment on the other person's character, says Dunning. By not giving up the money, in other words, the volunteers were concerned that they would be implying that the other subject was untrustworthy and a crook, because by keeping the money, they had decided it wasn't going to be returned. People feel a social duty to respect the other person, says Dunning. How does he know that the first person wasn't simply acting out of greed over potentially quadrupling their payoff? Through other variations of this game, of this study, in which the participants chose between trusting a stranger to return their money or a coin flip that would decide, people did not take such gambles, on getting their money back if they were told the coin flip would determine if they would get their money back or not. That tells us that people are responding to issues in the other person's character. The signals they are sending is that I respect your character. As soon as you take out that issue, people gamble at a rate that would be consistent with greed. So it really comes down to trusting strangers out of politeness and out of respect. That you feel that it is rude to suggest at the very beginning that a person is untrustworthy. Thus, you allowed them into your brain, into your consciousness, into your sphere of interaction, more out of fear of being impolite or being rude than many other factors. You can also interpret this as either being a sign of solidarity, an inexplicable sense of belonging and being a member of a community, in which everyone treats everyone with respect, or you can view it in a slightly more cynical way, that people trust others because they think they have to and are guilted into acting in a more magnanimous way. Different people may justify their behavior in different ways. That's because although most people will act in the more generous way that shows respect and trust for their fellow man, that doesn't mean that they believe initially that everyone is trustworthy. The situation causes internal conflicts, says Dunning, for most people. We get 30 to 40% of people saying something like, the odds are that I'm not going to get screwed or not get my money back, but they still will give up to a certain amount of money to that other person. And this is one of the techniques that scammers use. They start small because they're more likely to trigger these reactions of respect or politeness with small amounts. However, once the amounts have been paid, then the scammers will gradually increment the amount. So they might start off with $100, which for a lot of people is not a catastrophic amount of money to potentially lose. Once the victim is paid $100, then the next amount might be larger, $200, $300. And so it will ratchet up until extremely large amounts of money are now changing hands. And the motivations, the reactions by the victim, are still essentially the same. With each incremental amount, there are concerns about politeness, respect, honoring the trust that apparently the scammer showed in you, your sense of community, but there's also an underlying chasing the money, that you've already sent all of this money. It's inappropriate to stop now. You've expressed trust in this individual, and if you don't send the next amount, then obviously you're disrespecting and distrusting that individual. But there's also an underlying current in the psychology which says, you've sent all of that money and you need to send the next amount or you will lose it all. All of these are some of the underlying fundamentals of the early stage psychological manipulations that take place. In our next podcast, we'll get into additional psychological stimulus, motivations, and/or controls, such as the amygdala hijack and gaslighting and other techniques that scammers use to control you during the entirety of the scam. Thank you for listening to this. This is Dr. Tim McInnes from the Society of Citizens Against Relationship Scams. This is the Scars Podcast for St. Patrick's Day, March 17, 2019. Thank you for listening. Be sure to visit our websites. The SCARS official website is againstscams.org. To learn more about scams and the psychology of scams, visit romancescamsnow.com. And be sure to report every single scammer on anyscam.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being a supporter of our society. We encourage you to become a member for free. Simply visit againstscams.org to become a member of the society. Thank you. Have a wonderful day and happy St. Patrick's Day.